Hi, it's Beth here. It's episode 118, June 29th, 2020. Of course, the pandemic's still raging along, and, you know, now things have kind of shut down in Austin, you know, bars and stuff. So anyway, I'm in for the duration, so not lifting. So really, I'm talking on the phone a lot, and I really prefer it to Zooming. So yesterday I was talking to a friend, and she was telling me about her daughter. When she was younger, she used to love to sing. And when she was in middle school, she wasn't picked for the choir, which is amazing to me. And she stopped singing. And still, 30 years later, she's still not singing. And I just thought, oh my God. Middle school is such a precarious time. In my son's school, there was this English teacher, and she was ruthless. She was brutal. And there were three girls that I knew pretty well, and they all were told by this teacher that they had no talent. Two of them had kept journals and loved writing and wrote poems. I mean, they were 12. And they put their pens down and they never did it again. This is just, you know, that. How can you tell if somebody doesn't have talent at 12? It could be a budding talent. It could be their passion is so great that they'll get better and better and better at it. You just shouldn't say things like that. So anyway, it made me think about the flapper girl. What happened to me when I was not even 12, 11. 1 month before my 12th birthday. And I wouldn't even believe this happened if I didn't have a picture of it. But I do. And in sixth grade, at the end of the year, we had this huge talent show, or the nuns put it on. And they dressed us up, like a group of us, like flapper girls. I mean, the whole outfit. And you know, flapper girls weren't virgins. They were bad girls. And they took my hair out of braids. They curled it. I had a headband with a brooch on it, huge piece of jewelry. And then the most amazing part of all was that I had makeup on. I mean, nobody had makeup on. Mothers didn't have makeup on. They were all wearing mantilla shirts and Bermuda shorts. The only good-looking mother was a friend of mine's. She was in our class, and she had been a showgirl. And her husband spotted her at the Flamingo. Very wild story for our town. And he was a furrier in the mafia. The furrier in the mafia. And so she saw him, he saw her. They got married. And she was treated like dirt by all the other mothers. They tortured her. She got so upset that she was going to, and she was a Palomino blonde. And they said she dyed her hair. She got so upset that she was going to dye her hair black so the roots would come in blonde. She had three children. They were all Palominos, which is what we called them, because they had the whitest, prettiest Barbie hair, all of them, even the boy. And meanwhile, that's the environment this show happened in. And the Charleston outfit was adorable. We wore white gloves. We were dolled to the nines. So I couldn't believe this happened. And really, flapper girls were not virgins. That we were championing this, it was out of this world. And then I just talked to a couple of, remember I went to my grammar school reunion in New York. So I asked a couple of them, do you remember this? And they did. And they remembered a part of it that I forgot until they reminded me. It was a minstrel show. And they got dressed up like minstrels, blackface and everything. And the two girls I'm talking to, they sang Bye Bye Blackbird, and it brought the house down. I do remember that now. Of course, they can't run for Congress or be on a talk show, but, and I think you shouldn't be held accountable for what happens when you're 12, but God knows. So, This was a big, big night. But what I really remember is what happened to me. And I, you know how you read about people who have a moment in their childhood where they know what they want to be? And it is no doubt they have it in their head. I knew that I wanted to be a dancer. I'd seen the Rockettes a few times. I wanted to be in the lineup. There were a lot of girls there. I really thought I had a shot at it. Never wanted to be a star. Just wanted to be a dancer in the line. And I nailed it this night. I mean, I was on fire on stage. I kicked, and I can still see myself doing it. I found my true calling. Plus, I was dyslexic, and I knew I wasn't going to make it in school, and I didn't even want to. I didn't live in my head. I lived in my body. Nothing, no sports, nothing. I could have danced myself into a lather every day, and I knew it. I knew this is where I could put my whole heart and all of my energy, and that I could make it in New York. I could make it. I could make a living. I could get, not go to college and make a living. That's all I wanted. And so this is what happened. We got applause. We were in the parking lot leaving. I was sky high. My feet weren't even touching the ground. It was just amazing. And then this very important guy in our community came up to my dad, shook his hand, and he said, "You got yourself a little flapper girl there. I couldn't take my eyes off of her. What a dancer." And my father looked at me and smiled, and he said, "We are so proud of her." I never heard words like this in my whole life. Guy leaves. My dad says, "Hey, stand over there. I want to take your picture. Do a little bit of your dance." It's like I was like his daughter, like he was proud of me or something. I wasn't even embarrassed. People were passing by and they're like, "Oh, look at that. Just getting your picture taken." I didn't even care. I had what I found out later in life was confidence. For a moment in my life, I was not self-conscious. I had my picture taken. The look on my face, I never saw that again, because when we got home, my mother said, "Hey, little flapper girl, take the trash out right now." While I was still wearing my outfit. Silence in the house. I looked over at my dad. He shrugged. He wasn't going to save me. From that moment on, if milk spilled, if there was a gross job that had to be done, she told the flapper girl to do it. I mean, it never stopped for years. And then it even got worse when I got voted most popular in my class in the eighth grade. She came down on me because she thought I had a big head. And the jobs just got harder and harder, and she told people what a joke it was. So, I mean, I just kind of, you know, look, I had a beauty mark on my rear end. She told everybody about it, and she wants to be a showgirl. So what I did was, I mean, it was embarrassing, and I knew she hated it. So what I did was, I gained 25 pounds. I shrouded myself, just took the showgirl on a hiatus, just put her on a shelf, and things calmed down at my house. I mean, there were no more flapper girl jokes, no more nothing. She was just embarrassed that I was fat, which was awesome in comparison. So those are my choices, and that's what I did. So, and then I even got a boyfriend that didn't like me very much, and my mother loved him. So that was great. The sad thing is, I used to love Janis Joplin. And I used to love Cry Baby and Try, Get It While You Can. And it's so funny because it wasn't about a guy. It was really about my mother. Like, it took me years, but that's what I was, take another little piece of my heart. That was who I was singing for. I thought I was singing it for Warren. That was the guy's name. It was my mother. So yeah, screwed up teens, whatever. The flapper girl was gone. So it's funny, when I went to college, I lost all the weight. Like in the first, I lived in New York. I went to school in Florida. It was like the first week I lost 25 pounds. I didn't even go on a diet. I'd been on every diet in high school that there was. Grapefruit, starvation, all of them, and I couldn't lose any of it. I go away, just get miles away where I'm not going to get, you know, pinged for being the flapper girl. And it just dissolved. It was so strange. That's how much this left an impression on me. So I'm just thinking, how hard is it to be a teenager now? Like, I was talking to these two mothers, and all their kids want to stay home. They've got a choice in my area. You can go back to school in September. You can stay home. And they want to stay home. And I don't blame them. I mean, the cafeteria, parties. Now you can even see the parties online on Facebook that you weren't invited to. And they just want to stay home. And I'm thinking maybe they'll use their imagination. Maybe they can relax. Maybe they don't have to go into the social world every single day, and they're going to get this 6-month reprieve. Well, it's going to be 6 months and they want more. I just think it's got to be the hardest time of your life. And it's got to be even much harder now, because you not only as a girl have to be a good personality, you have to be beautiful, you have to be smart, you have to be good at sports, and you have to know how to keep your boyfriend happy. I mean, give me a break. That's impossible. So, you know, maybe the coronavirus is so terrible and I'm really upset about it, but maybe that's the silver lining, that they can just relax, take this time and just calm down and think about what they want to think about. So I have no idea. I mean, we went through the mill too, but nothing like this. I mean, I had girlfriends who were really smart and they wanted to be doctors, and their father said, no, you can't be a doctor because no guy will marry you. I mean, that was a real thing. And I was like, I guess that's true, Mary. Better not. You know, just that's what happened. You've got all these little tender hearts, and maybe they just need a little break. So I don't know. I mean, it's not good, and I want the pandemic to be over, and I know it's not healthy or anything, but maybe it's not the worst thing in the world. I don't know. I look at this little match girl. I mean, this little match girl. That's funny. Another one of my favorite stories. I used to read it to the boys to make them, you know, like they hated it. I used to take them to the furniture store where all the people would look at them like they were public enemy number one. And we would get followed. And then sometimes I'd read them Little Match Girl. They'd be like, oh God, not that story again. I don't know what's the matter with me. It was not good parenting, not at all. And it was funny. But, you know, crazy times. Anyway, where was I? Oh yeah, the little flapper girl. You know, I'm doing this podcast and nobody can stop me. You know, I was writing screenplays and being rejected my whole life. I don't know if that made me feel safe, because what I learned from the flapper girl was ambition, desire, a belief in yourself was really going to get you in a lot of trouble. But because of the podcast, I have something that I'm doing, something that I love to do. And I think I'm going to let my little flapper girl back out, let her fly around and see what happens. Why not? You know? What could be wrong? So, yeah, I was just looking at the picture and I'm like, I remember those eyes. I remember you. And sure, I'm ambitious now. I want this. And I'm going to want other things too. It's not too late. I'm here. So anyway, that's what I'm going to do. Just let your little flapper girl out. Nobody can stop you now. There's no time like the present, because we really don't have another. So, and maybe your dream changes a little bit. And maybe you're not dancing in a Las Vegas lineup, which, I don't know, I really want it to be a Rockette, to tell you the truth. I just thought, wow, that looks like 40 of your best friends. And they, when I found out that they made money and they lived in apartments, like they were self-reliant. Just seemed like, well, here I am now. Little flapper girl's coming out to play and nobody's going to stop her. So see if you got a little flapper girl in there that kind of got crushed a little bit, but she's not dead. Just brush her off and let her out. So anyway, I can't be the only one. We were raised in the 50s. Everybody got it. Everybody's parents had wacky ideas. So just let your flapper girl out. And I will be back. Thanks. Bye-bye.